for having me. I have to apologize. I've been on the faculty, I think, officially since 1998. This is my first visit to Oswego, so I feel shamed, as I should. But hopefully not the last. And you gave me cookies. So thank you so much for that. So, this is the best of times, worst of times, right? New library director, so everything is going to be better or everything is going to be horrible and who knows what's going to happen and such. Have you just gone through a dean search not too long ago? I feel your pain. So I've been asked to talk a little bit about future trends and possibilities, things out in the field to look at. I've tried to also make some comments that I think I've seen with successful directors, and I'm starting using your own words against you in that in your mission statement you say that you will be the heart of teaching and learning on campus. I actually really like your mission statement. It has the words "we" in it as opposed to "the library shall." Since libraries do nothing but exert gravity and fall apart, right? But librarians and staff and clerk and faculty and students are what make things happen. So I want to come back, and I was trying to find that image that was interesting but not too anatomical so that you were nauseous while you were eating cookies. I'm not sure I've succeeded here. But I want to come back to this notion of being the heart of the campus and the heart of learning for a bit. But I want to begin by answering what I think is the question that I've been called upon to answer, and that is, what is the future of libraries? And it's almost always asked in sort of, what is the future of libraries? Or in a sort of dismissive way, what is the future of libraries? And this is a question that has been given to me many a time by students and such. But the time I want to talk about was actually the MacArthur Foundation asked this question. They said, Dave, you've got a month. Go find out what the future of libraries is. And so what I did was I would pick up the phone and I would start calling folks. And, you know, I'd call library directors and people in the field, and sort of said, what is the future of library? And the response was almost always universally, what do you mean by that? Do you mean public? Do you mean peak? Do you mean academic? Do you mean this? Whatever. And sort of how do we slice and dice this question? But another interesting thing that would happen is I would call a public library director and say, what is the future of libraries? And they would invariably say, well, I can't tell you the future of academic libraries because they're screwed. But in public libraries, we're going to be a community space that's all about learning. And I would call up an academic library director, and they would say, well, I can't tell you about public libraries because they're screwed. But for us, it's all going to be a community space that's all about learning. And you just sort of go, hello, can we talk to each other? I think way too often in this field, we've taken the tools that we apply to collections of materials and books and how we sort of reduce them down to a category, a number, or a letter in this case, and put them on shelves and apply them to ourselves. And somehow we can't just be librarians. We have to be academic librarians. Well, we're public service academic librarians. Well, we're public service academic librarians in a public university. We just keep going down and down and down and down. Right? The old faculty metaphor of, you know, pink pond divide in two until biggest fish within it I am. And we don't see that there's a lot of commonality. That, in fact, you could talk a little bit about the future of libraries because there exists out there a relatively common vision. So I'm going to go through this briefly, but this is some of the results from that surveying work and talking and looking at the literature about what is the future of library. And that is the first thing is that it is about librarians. Their skills and preparations are key to the future of the library. That we could talk about the buildings and the collections, but we're going to talk about librarians are really being crucial. Now, I know several of you here work in the library but don't have the, you know, key to the executive washroom of the MLS. And let me just say that as someone who prepares librarians and who anoints them with that Masters of Library Science, I don't make such a big distinction. I sort of have a hit-by-the-bus definition of a librarian. If you were hit by a bus, would the library cease to function? You are a librarian. That's how it works, right? Because we know that there are all sorts of people keeping the systems running, keeping the facilities running, who know that collection like no one else. And while they may not have a master's degree behind it, they are librarians. They have things to contribute to this field. So I'm going to be really sloppy with that title. I'm just telling you that ahead of time. And the point was that we can keep talking. Am I going to drive you nuts with that camera if I keep going back and forth, or has it got a wider one? All right, very good. That
librarians are important. The human factor is important. It's more so than what we used to worry about with things like collections and physical buildings. That the library as place will continue to play an important but different role. That it's much more of a trusted community space. So we'll come back to that in a second. That education and learning are at the core of library services. That is, it's not something that we support, it's something that we're a part of. That the library and librarians are actively engaged in the educational mission of the university, not as a supplemental or support role, but at the front lines. That the information world is increasingly digital, yeah. We need better data to understand what we're doing, and that policies on intellectual property, openness of government information, and privacy outside the library will have a huge impact. We're seeing that already with things like the Google Book Settlement. We're seeing that with challenges to things like the First Sale Doctrine. We're seeing lots of different issues that, frankly, libraries, the famous line, if libraries didn't exist, it would be illegal to create them today. And we have the social compact around the idea that we are allowed to collect this, we're allowed to circulate this, we're allowed to digitize this. We have these whole wonderful ideas around fair use, but a lot of those are being eroded. And we see that already in things like our collections. I mean, the information world is increasingly digital. That's interesting, but it's not quite sufficient to say what's really happening is that as libraries' collections have shifted digital, they didn't just shift in format, they shifted in ownership model. That we went from buying collections to leasing and renting collections. And that has dramatic shifts in how libraries operate. But I want to get back to this question again for a second. And I also want to be really clear here that my time is yours, so if this gets not where you're going or you have additional questions, please feel free to jump in at any time. So we're in academia, we love academia is awesome, and in academia, the currency of the realm are questions. This is all we do. I had a doctoral student who said, how many times have you used the word interesting today? Well, that's interesting. Right? Get over it. Right? But this is a lousy question. This is a really, really horrible question. One, from talking to these different library directors, everyone doesn't quite understand what the turf is. I mean, it's really interesting that we can have a hard time defining even what this turf is. The other problem with this question, the real problem with this question, is that it sounds very deterministic. Like, there is a future of libraries. That one, there is one. And two, that there's only one. That somehow it's going to happen to us. That we're living in this world that if we just hired a director with about 10 feet further view than we have, we'll all be fine. You know, if they can just see what's coming around the corner. That's a really lousy idea. Because what it means is that we're somehow passive in our own future. My favorite line, Alan Kay, who talks about the best way to predict the future is to invent it. Right? So a better question is, what should be the future of libraries? I mean, if you were to look at it, and you were to project out, and you were to come to the conclusion that in 10 years there will be no libraries, are you okay with that? Right? If you look at current trends, you look at current data, you hear about all the digital this and the digital that, and now the Kindle, you can loan Kindle apps, we're all better off. Why do we need libraries? Are you okay with that? Are you okay with the idea that, well, the future of the library is a smaller footprint, smaller staff, smaller everything? Are you okay with that? Now, I ask you this for two reasons. One, there's a self-preservation aspect of it, but a larger aspect, are you okay with the idea that there's a multi-disciplinary unit that deals with memory and important information from the student to the provost to the faculty member that is core to this institution and allows it to understand the world around it, or not? Or which one are you okay with? Right? So, we're not going to ask what is the future of library because that really is up to us. That's really up to you. What's the future of SUNY Oswego's library? That's the people in this room, in this campus, for them to determine. It will not happen to you. Next thing, what about what I said before and librarians? Which is, this is a building, this is a facility, and I understand it's where you come on a regular basis, and I understand it's what you see on a regular basis. And I understand it's what you work with on a regular basis. We were just looking at the carpets upstairs and talking about someday there should be a renovation and all this wonderful stuff. But is that really the core of what happens here?
You know, is the architecture the sole benefit of this library? Isn't it really what we do with it? How we organize the information, how we organize the students, how we select materials, how we understand things. What are those skills that we need? A lot of technology has put library staff after library staff under the gun. You sort of feel like you're always behind the learning curve and there's always a new learning curve and they always somehow get steeper, right? Well, what are we doing to renovate the librarians to a degree? What are we doing in terms of continuing education? What are we doing with community access? What are we doing with mission and vision building? What are we doing to make sure that we are able to serve the needs of this community? So once we come up with this vision, are we able to actually deliver the vision? Because this building won't do it. A budget line and an org chart won't do it. Right? We've all worked in organizations where you've seen the org chart and you just laugh and laugh and laugh. Right? This person's above this person? Oh, I don't think so. Right? Who knows this collection? Well, they retired last year, and so no one. You know? What are we doing to cross-train? How are we doing to understand this? I really do see a very viable future where there will be many fewer of these and many more of these. We used to talk about accountants. Accountants were people that worked in accountancies. They were a place that you took your books and they did all the addition for you. Now, accountants are everywhere. Every corporation, every business, every nonprofit of sufficient size is an accountant. Right? Why do we feel that there's this one-to-one relationship with this thing called a library and librarians? We're working on different studies at Syracuse and elsewhere around e-science and the idea that increasingly science is happening in a distributed online world. Not only through simulations, but that NASA is pouring huge amounts of money into major telescopes in the Antarctic. But they don't want to have everyone have to go to the Antarctic to use it, so they network them together. And what they're finding is they have scientists work in these online digital settings. They need help. Every scientific discipline in this university is becoming an information-based discipline. Every discipline generating data that needs to be stored. Every discipline is generating communications and collaborations that need to be communicated. Everyone is dealing with the idea of network information, transferring that information, open source, all of those things are at their hearts information problems. At their hearts, librarian problems. They're doing brilliant physics, but they can't do the brilliant physics unless they have access to the network and the information. Right? So we're talking about now embedding increasingly librarians within laboratories, within research groups, within proposal writing teams, where they're working on the infrastructure, the intellectual information infrastructure to allow the science to occur. Right? We used to do this by opening the branch, right? We'd have the chemistry library and the physics library and all of those kinds of things. Well, office hours and working out there virtually are new ways of thinking about that. So what should be the future of libraries and librarians? And this one I think we all too often forget in a democracy. Now, you may think I've slipped into my public library speech, and certainly this is time I do spend in the public library speech, but it's a very interesting question. Because when you go to the root of why we educate in this country, when you go to the idea of the university, when you go to the idea of public libraries and non-public libraries and academic libraries, believe it or not, you find this nice little root sitting there, which is that a well-informed, well-understanding citizenry works better in a democracy than those who are ignorant, as we've seen in many, many a country recently. And so a lot of what we talk about, I noticed our provost just joined, I'm guessing that there's a lot of talk in Albany about if you want better citizens and better economic development and better participation, you better have better education. It sits underneath all of those things. And I think way too often we forget this. I think also when we look at big words like this, we feel somehow corny in saying them.
Yes, I'm a librarian because I believe in democracy.
Right, Jim? I'm a librarian because I believe in democracy. These are the levels of discussion and discourse that we are having in this country. Where are we in that discussion? Right? You look at the budget discussion not only in the state, but at the national level. What are our priorities? What do we want to invest in? These are discussions that librarians have an intimate part of having that conversation in. They're not simply the people who feed the briefs to the real discussers of this. We are the real discussers of this. You want to talk about privacy? You want to talk about social activism? You want to talk about democratic engagement?
librarians, that's core to what we do. That's the root from which we come from. So we can't give that up. Now, to be sure, the nature of libraries is changing. The nature of the physical space is changing dramatically. Libraries have gone from quiet buildings with loud rooms to loud buildings with quiet rooms. I was looking at your igloos outside. Have you had this argument yet? On a regular basis, one or two people, right? The humanities professor refuses to walk across the quad because those students are ruining the place, right?
I'm from Syracuse, right? Syracuse is a great place. Syracuse University is a great place to work if the students didn't mess it up. So this is one change. The other is that they've moved from knowledge access to knowledge creation. Once again, the igloos out there, to me, are a positive sign. What it means is that we're preparing people to produce information and not simply to access it. Right? This is one that we talk about alignments within the mission. Once again, I'm not going to speak for the administration of SUNY Oswego, but I'm going to guess that when I say things like, we are preparing students to be active citizens, actively involved, active producers and knowledge of information, critical users of this, and not simply better consumers, that should resonate with the library. Joan Fry Williams had a great line. She goes that libraries should be more like kitchens than grocery stores. Okay? Grocery stores are where we go and we get all our ingredients and then we go home to do something with. Kitchens are where we come and we build and we cook and we investigate, increasingly in a social space. Right? Maybe it's just my parties, but everyone always ends up in the kitchen. Because that's where interesting things happen. One, if you're socially awkward, you can always look busy by cutting something. But the point being that we need to talk about if we're preparing in our classrooms the teachers who are critical understanders of curriculum, if we're preparing business people who are masters of industry, if we're preparing physicists, if we're preparing chemists, if we're preparing these folks to be actively engaged in information, this is a place in which they can do that. So possibly instead of investing in more and more things to go on shelves, we need to invest in podcasting equipment, and we need to in media laboratories and software. And we need to start putting this stuff on the shelf, things that come from our community, not things that we are bringing to our community. Increasingly, this space is the territory of the community and not of the librarian. I mean, think about what it used to take to move the library to a place. We started that, right? We have the education branch, and that's where all our stuff is. And now what does it take to take some of the most powerful and useful resources to your faculty? One of these, right? Access to databases, access e-books, maybe not all of it, but a lot of it, right? In the public library space, you used to take a diesel engine in front of something to take the library. It's called a bookmobile. Now it's just a laptop to say, what do you need? Here you go. That means that we can get out to where the questions are, where the conversation, where the knowledge is being built, and we can let the community do what it does so well with space, which is hang out in it. The third space, right? This notion that this is a social place, that people are having conversations, that people are creating materials, that's what they should be doing. And we can be out where we're most needed. Maybe it's there, but maybe it's across campus, and maybe it's across the world. Maybe it's with that researcher who's doing the study in Africa, and we're part of that discussion. The changing nature of libraries has led to a changing nature of librarians, right? We've become unshackled from the collection. We've become unshackled from the collection in many, many different ways, right? The easiest, the most evident, is when someone comes to the reference desk and they ask us a question. We're just as likely to start doing this than we are to do that. The answers that we give them are just as likely to come from the cloud, the internet, the web, as it is from a physical resource around us. That's easy. That's obvious. But we're also talking about unshackling from the collection in many others. So I mentioned this briefly before, but let me spend a different second. We've shifted from an ownership model to a rental model in terms of our collections. And this has caused an amazing amount of pain. We made a Faustian bargain. Very early on, we made a bargain that when we moved from physical, analog, paper-based stuff that we bought and we thought was expensive to a rental model, which we keep paying for over and over and over again, and still don't own. Right? So when HarperCollins decides you only get to circulate a book 26 times, And we go, no, we bought those. HarperCollins looks at it and goes, are you insane? We didn't let you buy these things. Right? We rented them to you. And we can take them away whenever we want. Right? It's like, what was it, 1984, George Orwell, where Amazon realized they didn't actually have the permissions to sell the e-book, so they went and took them back from everyone's Kindle. Right? Someone then would be analogous to IKEA going, whoops, shouldn't have sold that bookshelf, let's break into their house and take it back.
This is a very interesting world. It allowed us to get more stuff, but it made it much more expensive. And it also meant that we totally changed what the role of the librarian was. The librarian went from curator of collection, owner of collection, maintainer of collection, to buying agent and seeker through that information. Now, that came with a lot of great rewards. I don't want to make this sound really negative. Great rewards. Wider and easier to access information, better means of accessing full text materials, better skills that librarians became, rather than physical managers, we became digitally enabled, and that's positioned us very well for the world we live in. But there are downsides. The ascending resource of the library is the librarian, unlike the peaking collection. Did I do this right? I always, this is the peak, right, as opposed to this is the peak. All right. My spelling, not so good. The circulating collections. Now, my guess is your circulation statistics look remarkably like this. Maybe up a little bit. Not like this. Maybe somewhere like this in some areas. And your digital usage database resources look something like that. Right? This is not unusual to SUNY Oswego. I hate to break that to you. This is not unusual to academia. This is not unusual in the universe. This is what's happening. So what it means is that these wonderful collections that we oriented ourselves around for so long are, frankly, reaching their end of their shelf life. They're reaching a point where their utility is beginning to decrease. Not in all sections. There are plenty of things, special collections, archives, materials, unique resources, where that's not true. But in many cases, they're beginning to find the end of their space. So we went through the periodical sections, and I saw lots of empty shelves. My guess is I'm going to see more empty shelves, right? So already we've begun to make some financial decisions, probably more than use decisions. I grant you that. But this is not going to be unusual. How's your microfiche collection doing? Any 8mm films still lying around, right? 8-track tape player?
There's LaserDisc.
LaserDisc, there we go. There's some hiding. All right, so this means that really, when you look at what the value is, to me, you look at a librarian, you look at an engaged research staff, you look at the ability to work multidisciplinary across different settings, you look at people and individuals who can take questions and answer them, who can work one-on-one in instruction and curriculum, you look at people who are flexible and how and whom they can work with, you look at people who can handle new collections that have never been thought of before. That's a rising set of skills, right? So that's something to think about. Now, throughout all of this, while we've been talking about changes, and I'd love to say these are future, but frankly, these are today, what hasn't changed is the mission of the librarian. The mission of the librarian is to improve society. And you can just stop the dot right there if you like. But how? Through facilitating knowledge creation in their communities. The mission of a librarian is to improve society through facilitating knowledge creation in the community. Now, a couple of things to note about this mission. First, it's the mission of an individual or person, not of an organization or institution. Now, I'm not going to ask you to show hands, but let's just say some of you probably think that your website sucks. If not, it would be a mirror. If you've ever been part of those conversations, it's your website, right? In this mission, if your library is doing something, your librarians are doing something, your staff is doing something. And talking forward to a director, we need shared ownership of responsibility within that. If not, and particularly, you guys aren't like a 500-person organization where you can hide, right? If you begin to serve, oh, that's someone else's problem, that's someone else's, no, it's yours. The mission is yours. Whether you're doing this sitting at a desk, whether you're doing this wandering through the stacks, whether you're doing this through metadata creation, it's still about improving knowledge, and it's still about facilitating knowledge creation. Now, how we do that, we need to break that down. So we can take these sort of major key terms, mission, librarians, whatever, and we can begin to break them down. Now, I'm not going to go through all of them. There's a book. But I'm going to just hit a few highlights. So I'm going to start with knowledge creation, because this is one where I gave that mission and a librarian said, but no, that's the professor's job. My job is to resource the student or the professor so that they can facilitate knowledge creation. So let me be very clear on what I mean by knowledge creation. Knowledge is created through conversation. Now, this is, comes out of lovely theory and learning theory and education theory, fellow by the important past, sort of a chemically enhanced professor from the 70s, who looked at how do people learn. And what he did is he said people learn through conversations. Right? Now, those conversations can be like this, one to groups. They can be one-on-one. They can be between different groups. They can be between different organizations. They can also, so you can sort of abstract them out. Like, for example, many humanities professors are dealing with conversations that have lasted over the millennia from society to society. But they go the other way as well. In other words, I can have lots of conversations with myself, call it metacognition or critical thinking or whatever you want. The majority of our learning is done that way. When you're reading, you're not having a conversation with the book. It's dead trees. It doesn't talk back. Right? You're not having it to the author because, you know, if you ask Bill Shakespeare why Hamlet was so screwed up, he's not waiting to take your call. You're having a conversation with yourself. Do I believe this? Do I understand this? Oh, this is how that fits. Oh, I get it. And by the way, this isn't just if you're reading your math textbook. This is if you're reading beautiful fiction. Right? We learn so much about ourselves by how we react emotionally and understand things from brilliant writers. So we're having these conversations. Now, we can go this further down, but stick with this me for a minute, which is if we're in the knowledge business, and I find few librarians who argue with the libraries in the knowledge business. We can say we're in the information business, but I'm a professor of information science with a PhD in it, and I can't define information convincingly. Right? What is it? Is it like water? Do we move it? Do we? It's knowledge. Right? We don't care if we transfer bits to you. We care if you understand. We care if you learn something new. So we're in the knowledge business. If we're in the knowledge business, we're in the conversation business. We're not in the stuff business. We're not in the building business. We're not in the stacks business. We're not in the acquisitions business. We're in the conversation business. We facilitate these conversations from the individual to themselves, in the classroom, on their own, within their groups. That's what we're doing. The power that we have is that we facilitate this. And I want to give you an example. Imagine if instead of assessing things like how many books were checked out, how, what was our database hits, and all this other stuff, we actually tried to understand, did we have an impact in the classroom? Did we have an impact in teaching and learning? Because that's what we're being asked to do. Right? Are you guys middle states? Right? Middle states knocks on the door. They don't ask about you the way they used to. I hate this, right? They don't say, how many volumes do you have? And if you tell us what your throughput was and what is it? Now what they're trying to say is, what are your outcomes? How are you assessing your outcomes? And can you demonstrate your outcomes? And by the way, that's not grades, which took me 3 years to get over. Right? Well, if it's not grades, then why the hell are we giving them grades? We go on. So imagine if instead of assessing yourself by your outputs, what you do, you try to look at this conversational world. So say that you took, well, the faculty are having conversation, the students are having conversations, the librarians are having conversations. Very simple, simple stuff. Right? This might be the education faculty, the business faculty. We can throw administrators in here. We can talk about different levels of students. But just for an example, real crude. What we can begin to do is we can begin to find out what these conversations are. And I should be really clear that the library can go out and ask them, and you do not ask them in the following way. How does the library facilitate this conversation? It's unimportant, right? One, they can't answer the question. Two, it's not all about you today. It's just unimportant. What you want to ask is, what conversations are you having? For example, just about every faculty member is having some form of tenure and promotion angst. Either they're worried about getting it, they're worried about giving it, they're worried about losing it. There's some angst going on around them, right? They may also be having very established ones. You may not be having this, but I was working with one college that was having the core curriculum, right? And they said, what's our core curriculum? What's the liberal arts core curriculum today? In outcomes. And there may be some regularity to this. So this is the conversation they're having, but we know that step one, they have a committee form, so it'll get handled. Step two, We'll do focus groups around it. Then there'll be a proposal to the faculty. Then it'll go to the faculty. Whatever that process is. We can do the same thing with tenure and promotion, right? First, we get together. We say they're okay. We find out if anyone else thinks they're okay. We see if they pissed off the dean. We see if they pissed off the provost. It's done, right? We can do this with the students. So they're worried about what to do Friday night. Now, I wanted to just stop right here to say, not every conversation does the library need to support. There are many they don't want to get anywhere near. But actually, this is interesting because some universities very much want to get around this. They're worried about things like in vocis parentis. They're worried about security issues. They're worried about binge drinking. They actually got into that conversation where many of us would run away from that conversation. But we also know they're having conversations like their English 101 where they have to do a topic exploration, research, and grammar. This is the one that happens, right? This is the one that happens right around fall semester. It's the one you have, like, all the answers sitting behind your desk, but you still make them go through tortured areas. I need to do a paper. Oh, really? As if it's the first time they've ever said that? Yes. Oh, pray tell. What? You know, it's like,
well, it's going to be on this. Oh, really? It's an amazing topic I've never heard. Yeah, meanwhile, you could have just given them three other things.
Anyway. And then what we can do as librarians is we can say, well, these are the services that we're offering. We have databases, we have embedded librarians, we'll come back to that for a second, we have libguides. And we can begin to map then how these services match to each individual conversation. For example, tenure and promotion, this one kills me. What do you guys do for tenure and promotion cases? So I'm coming up for tenure. What does the library do for me? Not a rhetorical question.
Find out how many times you've been cited occasionally.
Do you do it?
I'm trying.
Yeah. Right. This is what happened in Syracuse. I went through it, and I had a friend who was going through it. I said, call the library. They said, well, if you come down, if you or your send your GA down for about an hour, we can walk you through the citation databases. Now, what that says to me is two things. One, go away. And the other one it says is that bibliographic data searching, which is, frankly, the freaking core of the field since Dewey, we can teach you in an hour. That's exactly the message. The best part of what if it's that, like, we have a list of who's going up, right? Right? So you get a list and you say, hi, Dave. I'm your tenure librarian today. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go find that. Let's have an interview and talk about your data and all this stuff, and I'm going to go find it. Right? And you go and find those materials, those citations. Now, the best part of this is, if they get tenure, you are the biggest hero in their whole universe, and they will, like, turn over entire classes to you. Right? And if they don't, they leave before they get bad enough. Now, this is... Now, you can imagine this go even further, by the way, which is, and I know this absolutely never happens, where faculty might, I don't know, add a few citations. Right? Or they go to Google Scholar. Because Google Scholar will show you citations to things like your vita and to, you know, that Sherlock Holmes thing you wrote for fun, right? What if instead you said, hi, I'm your tenure librarian. I will be producing independent audit of your citations for the provost. I'll be providing that to your promotion and tenure committee. In essence, if the library became not just a voluntary service, which is great, but it became actually part of the core functions of the library in the core area that we provide. You can say the same thing with sponsored research. When someone goes to do a proposal out somewhere with human subjects, they've got to do some documentation of what they're going to do with the data. I'm going to go shock three-year-olds with a cattle prod to see if they like it. I will unfortunately record their name so when the police come, I can say it was me, etc. And with the data, I will keep it in a lockbox somewhere in Siberia, which really means a cardboard container in their office until they run out of room. Right? And everyone has to come up with this data use plan that satisfies human subjects and the Institute for, you know, all the NIH, etc. What if you said, all right, you're doing a study with human subjects, it will go in the information repository that the library provides, it will be in a secure system that has been auditable, you will have complete access to it by password protection, and by the time you're done, becoming part of the process and not simply adjunct to the process. Anyway, what you're doing by this is you should be able to go back and say, this was my direct contribution to this. This was my direct contribution to this. This was where I utilized this. And anything that doesn't have a line, we need to spend some time on was that worth our resources to do. This is a very different way of doing it than here are services, here's usage numbers. This is direct impact into the curriculum and research and instruction that we can assess. This is focused around conversations that people are having that are of interest to them, as opposed to, we'll do it and market the hell out of it, that will fix it. Because I hate to tell you this, but, you know, dining hall tent cards are not the solution to the long-term viability of the library. We can't market our way out of services that people don't use. Now, this also means that as we begin to understand the conversations that we're having, we can talk about structuring ourselves to meet them. Right? So, if you know, I'm just guessing, but you probably have a library org chart that doesn't look radically different than this. Right? So we have the library. The library has public services and technical services. On the public services, we do instruction stuff. We do reference. On tech services, we do cataloging acquisitions. And we're not quite sure where to put interlibrary loan. The next reorg will move it from one side to the other. Right? Why? I mean, it's still, I show this to like real human beings, the kind of people who understand that catalogs are where you shop for sweaters and not search for books. And they look at this and go, well, you're in an academic library. Why are you doing public stuff? No, no, no. Public is, you know, librarians that we trust to talk to real people. You know, tech staff is we like to keep them hidden. And every library, MIT has this, Oswego has this, like, you know, the Sorbonne probably has it, but it's a trench. Why? Why? What if we did something like this? And in fact, this was came out of SUNY Stony Brook, some work at SUNY Stony Brook, MIT, etc. They looked and said, wait a minute, this university is about teaching and it's about research. I'm generalizing. Teaching, we're going to do instruction for how to use resources. We're going to do concierge service. You see this one? Yale did this. Rutgers did this. The idea that every incoming freshman is assigned a librarian, and they meet with their librarian and say, here are your classes, here are the resources you're going to need. You better understand these databases. Oh, my, this is a hard ass. You better understand this, et cetera, et cetera. Concierge librarianship service. It's not, I understand you're a small staff. Don't get me wrong. I understand meeting all of them for 3 hours, you're done. But at the same time, it's not like you have 50, you're not Ohio State in the point where, you know, they call your number to give you a diploma that has your number on it. Okay. Embedded librarians, the idea of actually being in classes to answer questions as they come up, or as I call it, professor fact checking. It's a fascinating idea. You go, well, Dave, I can't go to all these classes. Well, what they're doing with embedded librarians is they're using Twitter. They have a Twitter feed, and what they do is every class gets a Twitter hashtag. And as they're teaching, the students are asking questions, and even the professor, you go, could you put this on Twitter? And the librarian's following the Twitter tag from here and sending resources and answers via Twitter in real time. Right? That idea would be right at that point of instruction. On the research side, talk about cataloging, talk about metadata and reference. Oof, that's where we really need it. Now you say, well, cataloging, you catalog materials and books. All right, I'm doing research. I just did a study. I have 5,000 materials. I have a lit review. I have all this stuff. What do I do with this? Well, we need to organize it. We need to preserve it. You know, any grant that comes in, we make a blog for it because that's going to be cool. But where do we preserve the blog? How do we find it next week? How do we find it in 3 years? Right? And what absolutely astounds me is, and I'll just say there's a Syracuse problem, because I'm sure it doesn't happen here, is that it is easier for the provost in Syracuse to know my healthcare status than it is to know my intellectual contribution to the field within the past 3 months. They can find out if I have healthcare and at what level I have healthcare, but they can't find out how many citations and what papers I published in last year without going to ask me or finding it on my website to see if I maybe did it in the Vita. That's nuts. Right? And so talking about, well, there's all repositories. We'll just put up a repository. Repositories are where it's a document morgue. It's where professors go to put their dead papers to live forever. What imagine instead of a solid communication forum for Oswego, where you can bubble up, here are the different grants, here are the different publications, here are trends. Did you know that these people are working in common areas? Can we talk together? Can we work together? So moving on down this food chain of different areas, if we look at the notion, for example, what do I mean by facilitating? Well, facilitating means access, yes. But not just access to stuff, also access to conversations. I have a question. The best answer is Jane, who lives through buildings down. Can I help Jane get to that question, get to that answer? Do you know that these two faculty members are working on this? I'm working in this research area. Who else is? I'm teaching this topic. Who else has taught it? Knowledge, which is to get to a conversation, I usually have to have some baseline of knowledge to do it. Right? So if you're having a conversation and you want to know the latest stuff, go to Eric. What's Eric? Well, this is what Eric is. How do I search Eric? Right? So we get to do basic instruction stuff. But a safe environment in which to do this. For example, the Commons. What do we want to facilitate? So back in my earlier virtual reference days, I had a librarian who came to me and says, well, we don't do virtual reference in my library. So it was sheepishly, almost ashamed, because that was the cool thing that everyone did. I said, well, tell me about your library. She goes, well, it's an all-girls liberal arts school in the Northeast. And at 9 o'clock at night, all the students come over in their bunny slippers and pajamas to study in the library. And I said, never offer virtual reference. Right? You don't want to – that's the community that you want to create. How are we creating that? How are we utilizing that resource? How are we allowing that to happen? And finally, motivation, right? So we talked a little bit about this. We talked about in tenure and sponsored research where we can build on why people are doing it and how they're doing it. Ultimately, what we're trying to deal with is a social contact with the community. A lot of what I've said today is not new news to those who keep up with blogs and read articles. It's like, commons, this. But how many of these discussions have we had with these folks? So I'll tell you the Syracuse University story. The Syracuse University story is we were full. The library was full. Our shelf utilization was at 92%. And so what did we do? We were going to off-site. We were going to go through the collection. I say we. I can't take blame nor credit for this.
The library was going to take it up. They were going to build an off-site storage. Originally, it was going to be NYU. It was going to be like right on our south campus. But then NYU pulled out at the last second. So we were going to take all these books and ship them down to Fishkill, New York. Right? Why? We were going to put them in bins. The humanities faculty went nuts. They went crazy. They said, what are you talking about? They said, your library's crap already. You're going to make it crappier for me? You know, you don't have the collections we need. And the librarians were coming afterward. They said, we didn't know where this came from. They said, years ago, they stopped asking for new books and new materials. We thought it was because we were serving them well. The truth is they had given up on us. I'm going to put this request. You'll never get it. You'll never get it. Right? So they stopped asking over time. And suddenly, bam. Now, why were they doing the off-site storage? It wasn't just because they were full. They were also clearing out the first floor and the basement floor for your igloos, for community space, for discussion space, for the corner space. Now, librarians had lots of data and evidence to show that students were using. I mean, you walk in after they opened the cafe, you opened after they took away the turnstiles, after they opened up the first floor, it was packed, certainly more packed than our student offices were. And the humanities faculty said, I don't care, that's not what the library is for. For me, more books. I mean, they're like hoarders. Just put them everywhere. I'll find them. All too often, I mean, come on, you know that you have faculty that know that collection better than you do, right? The library was having a conversation amongst itself. This happens way too often, where we were finding new ways of serving, new ways of benefiting, but we didn't actually talk to the people that we were benefiting. And so what it quickly turned into, and it was ugly, was undergraduates need space, graduate students don't. Who are you here for? Pick. As opposed to having a regular conversation with those faculty saying, we have a lot of stuff here that's junk. Tell us what we can get rid of. Help us do our week. Help us figure out what can go on-site and off-site. Help us come up. In other words, this ongoing conversation. So here's what's going to happen this year and next year. Your search committee, your provost, is going to have a great conversation about what the future of libraries is. They're going to hire a director. It'll become the director's role. And if that director, and if you never have that conversation on an ongoing basis, you have failed your search. Because this has to be a constant conversation. It's just like the university. What are our priorities? What is our mission? We can't just every 10 years stop and come up with new ones. We have to have a regular ongoing feedback and conversation within that. Because over time, these compacts will evolve and mold and change. So Dave's saying, now we're about conversations and not stuff. All right.
Did we bother to tell anyone that? Do we know how we're evaluating that? Do we see how does that turn into a tenure statement for a librarian? When you guys go up for tenure, do you have, for example, if you're a reference librarian, can you include transcripts that show how well you did in reference? You can do that now. You couldn't before. Can you talk about the number of times you presented in the classroom? And not just the papers that we've submitted and we tied it to ALA to get this documented. Right? What impacts did we have? And that needs to be a conversation with promotion and tenure to see how it works. Now, the thing is that as you take this mission, as you begin to look at how these things fit together, what you can begin doing is just like I was breaking these major areas down, you can break them down and down and down and down, and you come up with a picture of the field.
I'm not going through this, I promise.
This is my view of the field. I can tell you what that means. Right? Do you have one? It doesn't have to be this pretty, but you have one. What is the future that you want to have? What is SUNY Oswego's future of library going to be? Well, how do we organize ourselves? Or do you have a set of functions and job descriptions? Do you have a director that you're going to bring in who's going to help you form this? Or do you have a director who's going to help you process and do the more stuff and more stuff? Right? Worldviews are vital and important. I think we think of the too abstract, too useless. Oh, God, worldview, please. It's another academic. We're all academics. Remember, academia comes from Plato's playground. And it was Socrates taught in the academy, which was a gym. It's like the YMCA of Greece. It was great. The point of this of a worldview is it helps you map what's happening and coming down the road. Right? It helps you not just see what's 10 feet farther than anyone else, but helps you craft where you want to go and how you want to see it. So I see lots of animal pictures and I see a leopard over there. And the example I give with the worldview, I know some of you were with my SUNY presentation, but I'll do it again. If I were to tell you, pick an animal to win a race, to win a foot race, you might say, I'm keeping the cheetah. Right? Cheetah's fastest land on the list, I'm going to win. Right? And I'll pick a dog. I'll pick a lab. Okay, you're going to lose. I say, all right, the race is 3 miles. I'm going to win. Because it turns out a cheetah can go very fast, but not for very long. It like can go really fast, and when it misses the antelope, it's got to sleep for a day in order to get that speed up. Whereas Labradors can go pretty fast forever. Worldview, you say, but Dave, you didn't tell me how long the race was. Well, there's so many things we don't know. So you ask me, what's the future of libraries? I don't know. Tell me about the demographics of your population. Tell me how active your faculty is. Tell me what your major strategic goals are. Do you want to increase research overhead and research funding? Or do you want to increase teacher and teacher quality? Do you want to be the low-cost provider? Or do you want to be the quality provider? How are you going to impact Albany? What's your position currently with Albany? All those factors make your future unique. And unless you're paying attention to all those factors and have your worldview that accommodates those, you're just going to be bouncing from one to another. Because if you're doing cataloging because you've always done cataloging, if you're doing reference because you've always done reference, if you're doing interlibrary loan because you've always done interlibrary loan, stop it. And ask yourself, why are we doing this? And there are some great answers. But you may find there's one or two that you don't, you say, you know, this was brilliant in its day. But that day is done. And that can be tough because people who own that function, people who did that function, feel like you're devaluing what they did. And what you have to build is a culture that says, no, 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 no. If you didn't do that, we couldn't be here. But if we keep doing that, we can't be there. Right? That's a very different message than why the hell do you have government docs? Well, because government transparency was kind of important during the Nixon administration, and that's how we did it. Right? Absolutely true. But now, if you depend on government docs and what the government sends you from the printing press, you are screwed in terms of transparency because everyone's realized that's the expensive way, and if I just throw it on my website, I can get rid of it in a week and say it was public disclosure. And librarians can be there and say, no, no, transparency is still why we're doing this. Now we're going to talk about an Albany transparency project. We're going to document every website, create a repository on everything that's important to our students. Couldn't do that unless you'd done government docs before. You couldn't have done government docs unless you'd had the card catalog to find your way through the soup doc number, etc. Right? And you couldn't do that unless you everything that we have done has been important, should be valued, and should be celebrated. But that's not why you continue it, is because you did it. You continue it because it still makes sense. So when you look for a new director, pardon the unsolicited advice, you need to find someone who's committed to conversation. And I don't mean that as in my grand scheme of it. You need to find a director who spends more time out of their office and more time not only on these floors, which is important, talking, but in the university, the whole building, spends time building relationships, talking about what they need, talking about what's happening. Not that sits in their office and waits for you as the subject liaison to bring them up to speed. They need to be a partner on those things. You need someone who's inventive. Once again, the future is not set in stone. I cannot come back down to you and say, here is the program that you must adopt at SUNY Oswego. You must have more common space. You must reduce your shelving by 20%. You must increase your data. I can't give you that formula. Only you can come up with it. And ultimately, whatever job description you have, I've read your job description, very nice. To hire the person with that job description, you have to say, here's our job description. There's an excellent chance that by the time you actually start the job, it will be different. The one thing I can guarantee you is that whatever job description you come up today will be out of date tomorrow. I can guarantee you. You need someone that says, absolutely. Absolutely. Having someone look at that and say, absolutely, is very important, as opposed to, can you tell me exactly what the square footage of my office would be? That's not the answer. Able to facilitate a deep worldview and a new social contact. You talk about the renovation. Brilliant. What do you want to renovate for? You guys have ideas. I don't want to say that you, let's just renovate for the hell of it. I know you have ideas. But have you all gotten together and really talked about not what it could look like, or not what Syracuse has, or not what Berkeley has? What do we need? I just saw Lake Effect. I love that. Lake Effect Cafe. Though sometimes in winter, it's got to be not as cute. That cafe looks like a really cool, interesting space that brings something very different. You know, the 24-hour room that I saw. Once again, there was some discussion about 24-hour access, right? Those space conversations didn't come from, let's have a cafe. I think it came from, how can we make a more social environment? How do we know that we've got study habits that go 24 hours a day? They come from the need. Have you done that for the rest of the building? Have you really looked at, could you, University of Denver has a donor. Donor's going to pay god-awful money to redo their library. And he made a deal with them. He said, we're going to gut your library. Gut it. Build it brand new. Whatever you want, you get it. They had approximately 1 million volumes. They said, you can bring 200,000 back. The donor said that. Now, we can be pissed off all we want about a donor saying that. But at the same time, we say, okay, could we? Couldn't we? How do we answer that question? What's the purpose of it? Clearly, the donor has in their mind a purpose. Do we agree to it? What is their worldview? And is there any accommodation, or are we a totally different picture and say, please take your money and walk away? And are we willing to do that? And are we willing for the administration to do that? And if not, there's a breakdown in this conversation. There's a breakdown in this social compact. And the social compact is not negotiated once and left. It's something that we build every day. So are you guys, in fact, the heart of the campus? Right? It's on buildings. It must be. We're the heart of the campus. This is, by the way, the best anatomical drawing I could see that didn't get obscene. Anyway. I had someone say, I was going on an interview as for an academic library director, and I told someone that I believe the library is the heart of the campus. They said, it's more like the spleen. You know, it's sort of there. We think it does something, but frankly, we can live without it. I would tell you that this is not the right metaphor. I understand what you mean, but I want to give you a different metaphor. The metaphor is thinking of the library as the circulatory system of the university. That is, that we're in every part of the university. That as ideas emerge in education, we take them to business. As they emerge out of education or in business, we take them to liberal arts. We matchmake students. We matchmake projects. We help that university break down, frankly, the silos that we built over millennia. We are the people. Right? I have yet to find one university that doesn't have an interdisciplinary program of some sort. We'll give you money, we'll not take your money, we'll do something, we'll throw you a party to be interdisciplinary. And faculty say, absolutely, as long as they're doing exactly what I'm doing. Right?
You guys don't have that. You guys are in every classroom. You guys have the potential to work across every discipline, every faculty. You guys have the ability to bring information and facilitate these conversations. You want to start a really solid interdisciplinary program? Start it here. Start it by talking about students and what they need. Talk about core curriculum. Talk about information resources. Wouldn't it be amazing to go back to the English department and say, do you realize that 80 of the last 300 papers that were cited in your papers came from anthropology? Would you like to have a conversation there? What information resources were used recently? Did you know, by the way, that you're doing research on this topic, that this faculty member sitting in this building actually worked on a similar topic? Maybe you could have a conversation. That kind of data, being part of the life of the program, talking about tenure and promotion systems, talking about how you can be part of a research process to solve problems. To solve problems, not simply, oh, it's good, let's mark it and hope they come to it. Ultimately, the future of the library comes back to our mission. This mission has not changed radically in the 3,000-year history of our profession. The tools with which we do it change radically. The mission is not that different from what they did in the Library of Alexandria. The Library of Alexandria was a big collection of stuff, but that's not why they built it. They built it to bring scholars from around the ancient world together for economic development of Alexandria. The librarian, the director of the library, was one of the king's closest advisors in the city. They brought it together as a way to understand the world, not to read about the world. So the mission of the library is to improve society, is to improve the community that we're a part of. The mission of the library is to make SUNY Oswego a better place to be, a better place to research, a better place to work, a better place to learn, a better place to understand. And we do that through facilitation. We do it through service, absolutely. But we also have to do it through leadership. If you try and figure out what the grand literature is today, when you have faculty who are doing blog posts and Twitter and all this other stuff, you say, do we capture that? Do we understand who's speaking here? That information is disappearing if it doesn't show up. You guys need to capture it. And it's not wait for the faculty to figure it out so we know what to capture. I'm the faculty. Don't wait for me. You won't get a good answer. You've got to help guide that. Do you want to move to an open access forum? Do you want to talk about how you can be part of open access? Do you want to talk about capturing the gray literature? Do you want to talk about emerging scholarly strengths from the work being done? You can figure that out. You can lead the university in doing it and not wait. And ultimately, the mission is to innovate. And innovation is not some grand scale that only happens with Steve Jobs imagining the iPad. Innovation happens at the reference desk. Innovation happens walking that floor. Innovation happens in answering a question. If you can make whatever task you do that much better, that's innovation. If you can make it that much easier for a student to learn, that's innovation. Capture it. Build on it. Understand it. And do the next. And do the next. And do the next. The library can no longer be a reflective collection pit of ideas. It must be an active member of the scholarly community, facilitating and enhancing the conversations to be more productive, more powerful, more impactful than it ever has been before. The future of the library is to be at the center and the circulatory system of the campus. If it is not, then I'm not sure there's a future. But ultimately, that's not for me to answer. It's not even wholly for you to answer. It's for the entire community. SUNY Oswego of Oswego of New York to answer. It's that social compact. It's that conversation that you have to have.